we're going to be learning this week the more about the machlokas, the fundamental machlokas in our whole sugya, Rabbeinu Tam and Rashi, whether anim hapi b'charara applies to metzia b'hefker. As I've mentioned several times, this is really the fundamental debate in the whole sugya, and almost any discussion of anim hapich is going to get involved in this machlokas. So tonight I want to just give an overview of some of the points in which the points which Rabbeinu Tam might apply to, some of the cases where Rabbeinu Tam does not apply. First of all, just basic, to discuss basically how we paskin, most Acharonim paskin like Rabbeinu Tam. The Ramah says the Svar Rishonim Nirei Iker. For the Svarim it's a little bit less clear. The Mechaber brings both Shitas, Yesham Ramutter, Yesham Asher. So there is some debate about how the Mechaber paskins. For Svarim it's more of an issue. But certainly for Ashkenazim, virtually all Acharonim agree, as far as I know, that the Iker is like Rabbeinu Tam, the Metzia b'Hefker, it is Mutter, and Ani Mahapi Pecharar does not apply. It's also worth noting that Davni Nezer makes a point, he's not discussing Machlokes Rabbeinu Tam and Rashi, but Davni Nezer makes a point that in this sugya in general, when you have a Machlokes, he takes for granted that the answer is Savag Rabbanan Lekula. He says that these Yisurim are Drabanan. He says, "Bedinim elu vaday as liyon lekula, simchinan ala mekel she'en kan elu drabanan." Takes for granted that you can be mekel. It's not so simple. There are acharonim who seem to be more machmer. When we learned Yared Lomnos, we saw also that there also the consensus was that we are mekel. The Rif already paskin that when you have a shal in the Gemara, whether a certain case is usher because of Yared Lomnos, the Rif said mutter, and Muki Yosef explained because the incumbent who wants an injunction against his competitor is the motzi. Anybody who wants to do what he should be allowed to do is the muksuk. You want to stop him, you're the motzi. There were some who disagreed also, but there, in general, the consensus was, misafik, you can be mekel. Here, too, the Avnei Nezer at least claims to us that when you have a machlokas, you can be mekel. But at least the base of machlokas, Rabbeinu Tam and Rashi, for Ashkenazim in particular, we are mekel. Now, one of the fundamental questions is how far to extend Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam himself was talking specifically about metzia v'hefker, something which is free, something which I find on the ground, other kinds of hefker. What about cases which are sales, but there's something else that makes it unique? Perhaps I'm getting a discount, the price is low, perhaps it's next to my other field, ben ha-meitzar, where even if the field is going at the same rate that any similar size and similar quality field would go, it's particularly advantageous to me. Many other cases the post can discuss that something could be unique. So how do we? So what's the halach in these cases according to Rabbeinu Tam? So the Ramah that we're doing this week says, the Ramah takes for granted that these cases are all mutter. But according to Rabbeinu Tam, lav dafka metzia b'hefker, any case which is unique, any case where I can't just be told by the incumbent, go somewhere else. According to Rabbeinu Tam, the whole svara, as explained by Tosfos, the Rishonim, is that when it's not metzia b'hefker, we tell the second guy, leave him alone, go somewhere else. Anytime I can't go somewhere else, I can find an equivalent opportunity. For example, metzia b'hefker, it's mutter. So these other cases, as long as you can point to some uniqueness, whatever it may be, it's mutter. That's why the Ramah says that ben hametzar is mutter. If it's an adjacent property, there are many advantages to having properties adjacent. That's why he says, Zol, if something is going to be cheaper than I can get it somewhere else, then anim hapik does not apply according to Rabbeinu Tam. The Ramah does not bring a dissenting view. The Shach does. The Shach mentions a Ramban in Bava Basra, in his Chiddushim to Bava Basra, that the Ramban there says that if it's a sale, even if it is a discounted sale, and apparently even a steeply discounted sale, anim hapich still applies. The Ramban seems to say it's some kind of low plug. The Ramban says, Elo chilku chachamim b'mecher. Once it's a mecher, they treated all mechers as the same. Mecher normally has anim hapich. Even if you found a particular mecher, then it doesn't make a difference. Even if you found a mecher where it's zol, or there is some advantage, the Ramban is talking specifically about zol, Anim hapich still applies, and it would seem that the Ramban, the Shach, quoting the Ramban, would reject all these kulos about ben hametzar, or any point of uniqueness you find about the deal, doesn't make a difference. The Ramban says, lo chilku b'mecher, once the sale is characterized as a mecher, anim hapich still has to apply. Now this is much less clear how we paskin. Here, there are acharonim who seem to think that First of all, the question is how the Shach paskin. The Shach just says, this is what the Ramban says. The Shach doesn't explicitly take sides. Some assume that by bringing the Shach and not rejecting it, he's implying that he accepts the Shach, he accepts the Ramban. Some don't seem to say that. Even if he does accept the Ramban, we still have the Ramah who doesn't care. So here it's much less clear how we paskin. Here you do find Achronim placing different weight on the Shach and this Ramban. And this is something, again, that comes up very often. Most cases, certainly cases that come to Beis Din, you're not dealing with cases that are literally Metziah v'Hefker. You're dealing with cases that are either Zol or there's some other advantage in the particular deal. And then the question becomes, first of all, we have to assume that we paskin like Rina Tam, which most poskim do. On top of that, we have to assume that we paskin, not like this Ramban, that we paskin like the Ramah, that any uniqueness is a sufficient reason to abrogate Ani Ma'apech, and that is much less clear. So, for example, as I mentioned earlier, the most common case of Ani Ma'apech B'Charara in my experience in Beis Din is real estate cases. Reuven, the first buyer, puts in a bid, perhaps, makes an offer. Shimon then wants to put in a convening offer after, let's say, Reuven's bid has already been accepted. Classic Ani Ma'apech Shaila. Invariably, Shimon's claim is, it's like a Matiah. We pass like a Rabbeinu Tam. It's like a Matiah. It's Hefker. It'll start telling Beis Din all kinds of reasons why he can't just find another house to buy. He'll talk about the location. He'll talk about the construction, he'll talk about the price, he'll give 100 reasons why there's something unique about this house, why he can't just go down the block and find a different house. Is that a taina? The answer would seem to be no. Because even though there is a Ran, the Ran does claim in the context of the sugya that real estate is sort of unique. The Ran says, Mekach karkos, v'she'ena karkos, mitzuyin likach. It's not so easy to find real estate. But the Ran is not saying this in the context of Rabbeinu Tam's din. The Ran is talking about Asher and Ani. The Ran is making a different point. It's clear from the Gemara that Ani Mahapak does apply to real estate. The story of Rav Abba and Rav Gidol, which is the classic story of Ani Mahapak, the whole source is from that story. The Gemara took for granted Ani Mahapak applies, even though it's real estate. They can argue that in those days, maybe life was simpler, maybe real estate was more of a commodity, it was more interchangeable. Today, where our complicated houses, complicated regulatory regimes, complicated everything, maybe today it's easier to become a Metziah, but still, you basically have an uphill climb to establish it as a Metziah. You have to show something concrete and tangible and convince us that it really is a Metziah. And along these lines, let's consider some of the ways the poskim have defined Metziah. So we said, Zol, the Ramah paskins, not like the Ramban, the Ramah says Zol if the price is at a significant discount, or the Ramah doesn't say the word significant, the Ramah that says Zol is a Metziah.
What about like something on the property like Amara on the field, so therefore a cave, or something that has like a mining cave, there's no other mining cave in there.
Yeah, if it had unique mining opportunities, mineral rights, if it had something like that, that very well could be Metziah, yes. I'm not challenging that. The typical cases of residential housing, the advantages are not usually quite so significant, quite that tangible and unique. If they are, then yes, I would agree that would be good. So the question of what does Zol mean? So this was tackled by the Marik. Marik has a tshuva. The question was about banking establishments. There was an incumbent. Somebody else wanted to open a rival banking establishment. First guy felt, Imad Bacharara, this is already his banking operation. And the second guy argued it was a Metziah because there weren't that many opportunities. They were controlled by the government. This was a rare license that was being offered. Marik says, that's not a Metziah. Go somewhere else. Go to a different city, open banking. Go someplace else in the city. You think, based on the business studies that you did, that this is a particularly attractive opportunity. That's not called Revach Barer. He says, if you can show me a concrete, tangible number, this is 30% cheaper than somewhere else, this house is 30% cheaper than any realtor will tell you the going rate is 30% higher, fine. That's Zol. Stamazai, because you think, based on your projections, that you're likely to do better here than somebody else, that's not called Zol. And the postman in general say this. You have to establish a clear and convincing, compelling case that this is cheaper. It's not enough to simply argue that this is probably going to be better for me. There is a machlokes, which the Marsham and the Mishpat Shalom brings, which you'll see hopefully either today or later in the week. There is a Marsham who brings machlokes among the early Achronim, the 16th century Achronim, as to whether if this particular location is unique, but I can really do the same thing somewhere else. I want this location because it's closer to me, it's more convenient. For some reason, I find this location beneficial. I really could open the store somewhere else. Some Achronim say that's unique. Having to go somewhere else from where I live. America's talking about a case, somebody was coming from outside the city. So we tell them, why go here? Find a different city. Why go to this alley? Open the bank in that alley. But if you live here and you want to open here and the only alternative is to travel far away or go to a different city, that would require tircha. That's less convenient. That's that again, that is unique. That's zol. That's like ben ametza. We're having two karkos adjacent. Is a significant benefit. Others say no. Others say unless you can demonstrate real zol, a real financial advantage, unless you can show that it's clear that you're going to stand to gain more money or do better by this location than that location, then there's no exception, and the rule of Ani Mahapech still applies, even according to Rabbeinu Tam. Discuss briefly two major exceptions that Achronim established in this Heter of Rabbeinu Tam of Hefker. One of them is called Tircha, and the other is called Umnasa B'kach. Tircha was a doctrine based on Rishonim that say that even though Rabbeinu Tam is Mekil when it's Metziah B'Hefker, when it's a unique opportunity, that's only insofar as the first person has not invested significant effort in the deal that he's trying to do. When he has, you are not allowed to interfere. The makar of this is Rishonim and Kedushin. Rishonim asked a kash and Rabbeinu Tam. Rishonim asked, and in Gittin it says, Ani HaManakif Barosh HaZayas. An Ani is climbing a tree to knock down Zaysim of Hefker. So he climbs a tree, hanging precariously from a scaffold. He's knocking down olives. Someone else comes on the floor and sees, oh, olives, picks them up and walks off with them. So he's not allowed to do that, even if the person on top was not actually cutting them. He never held them in his hands. He just banged them down with a stick. So he didn't actually have a real kinyan. That's called gezel mpnei darchei shol. So the Rishonim ask in Rabbeinu Tam, Tosfos and our text do not actually ask this question. Other Rishonim do. Some say Tosfos asked it also. There might have been a different text in Tosfos. Rishonim ask in Rabbeinu Tam, why? Metziah v'hefker. The olives are hefker. They're free olives. So why don't I have the same heter of Metziah v'hefker? According to Rabbeinu Tam, there's no ani mahapech when it comes to Metziah v'hefker. So why is the case of the olives different? So the Rishonim say this doctrine of tircha. Since the first person invested tircha, you have no right to interfere. The Rosh says, Shani hasam shetarach b'hem la'ani la'pilam la'aretz, sam chadati alayu. The Rosh says a twofold thing. First of all, he was terech. Second, he was samech das. He was confident that he would secure these olives. The Ran says even more briefly. The Ran doesn't even say samech das. The Ran just says shani hasam shetarach b'hem la'pilam. The Achronim, the early Achronim again, Marshal, Matz Binyamin, Sheres Yosef, later Achronim, Chasam Sofer, all struggle mightily to understand what the Rishonim mean. What do you mean tarach? The whole Ani Mahapech only applies in the first place if he was tarach. Ani Mahapech means Mahapech. He was tarach. And Tosfos himself uses the Lashon Tircha on a Mahapech. Tosfos says that according to Rabbeinu Tam, we don't see Ani Mahapech in a context of Hefker. When do we see Ani Mahapech? Only in a case of a sale. And he says, Mishamachi Karan to Nikra Rasha, when it's not Hefker, Hilama Mechazer al Zosha Tarach Bachavero. Rabbeinu Tam himself says explicitly that Ani Mahapech applies where the first one was Terech, and even then, only when it's not Hefker. Rabbeinu Tam clearly says that Tircha is that even if he was Terech, it's still Mutter if it's Hefker. So what is this new doctrine of Tircha? So there are three different explanations of the Achronim, the Nachos Tzvi, in the back of the Shulchan Aruch has an extensive discussion, Chasam Sofer, Mar Yahalevi, other Achronim. Three different formulations for what the bar for this new level of tircha is, and Ani Mahapech applies even in the case of Hefker. Marshal understood that the tircha in question is literally risk to life and limb. The Ani was not just tereach, he gave it his all. He climbed the tree, he put himself in danger, he engaged in physical tircha, it was physically difficult for him, he risked his life by doing this. That's the tircha that gives him special rights and nobody should interfere. But in the Marik's case, for example, the Marik invoked Tircha, even in his case of the bank. He says, since the first banker already invested a lot of effort and payments and effort to get his bank open, even if it will be considered Hefker, he says, which he holds it's not, but even if it will be considered Hefker, he says, like a Metziah, like Zol, you can't interfere because he was Terech. So Marshal says, no, that's not Tircha. Every Ani Mahapech has that kind of Tircha. The Tircha here is a special level of Tircha that involved physical effort and physical danger. Maybe, said the Marik's case, because travel in those days was very dangerous and very, very, very difficult, physically difficult. Maybe traveling back and forth to the new city, maybe that's the special level of tircha. But simple effort, business effort, is not considered tircha. Masas Binyamin has a different formulation. He says it's not dependent on how much risk you have or how much physical effort. He focuses on the second phrase in the Rush, Samach Alayu. He says, if you're convinced, if it's Bali Yadcha, if you have confidence that you're going to acquire it, that level of tercha that you invested so much tercha that you feel confident in the result, that's the level of tercha which prevents the second person from coming along, even if it's hefker. Since you invested tercha to the extent that you were confident that you would win, at that point it's not fair for someone else to take it. I'm not sure why it's totally on tercha. Even without tercha, if the situation was such that, even with minimal tercha should come out, that if the situation was that you were confident, he shouldn't interfere. But that's what he says. Tercha means tercha to the point that you succeeded far enough that you're confident that you're going to end up with the property. But if it's just up in the air, like in the case of Marik, he disagrees with the Marik too. He says, you don't know what's going to happen. He says, you paid money, you invested time and effort, but who knows what's going to happen? Who knows whether in the end you're going to win approval for your bank or not? You don't know. He says, that's not called Samach Alayu. So in general, he says, that's the litmus test. That's the measuring stick. Whether the tircha is such that by an impartial person's assessment, you are pretty confident, pretty much guaranteed that you're going to get what you're looking for. In that case, then Anim Hapak applies even Makam Hefker, even according to Rabbeinu Tam. Where Rabbeinu Tam says it does not apply is a case where you invested some effort and you have hopes, but you're not at all convinced that you're going to win. That's when Rabbeinu Tam says there's a distinction between Hefker and non-Hefker. Hefker is mutter. Non-Hefker, since he did put in a significant amount of effort, even if he's not confident, then it's still Aser. The third Shita, which is preferred by the Maria Halevi, some Sefer discusses this at some length, although he ultimately rejects this. The third Shita is, I think, the most intuitively satisfying, the most appealing, intellectually appealing approach, is that the Tercha in question is when he is going to use your Tercha and benefit from it and leave you empty-handed. The guy climbed the tree, he climbed the tree, he knocked down the olive, you take the olive and you walk off. You're essentially stealing his Yegia Kapov. He did all the work, and you're walking off with the olives. That's not fair. That's the kind of tercha in question that Rabbeinu Tam agrees that it's not fair for you to take. However, he says, in a case like Marik, where he might have spent a lot of time and a lot of money trying to set up his bank, but you're not benefiting from that labor, you're going to have to do the same thing yourself. In that case, there would be no issue of tercha, because you're in no way benefiting from his tercha. The fact that he's going to lose tercha, okay, that's unfortunate, but that doesn't stop you from taking away his thing. If it's hefker, according to Rabbeinu Tam's heter of hefker, the other discussion about Amnasa Bekach, maybe we'll get to later in the week.